You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We haven't really talked a whole lot about the NBA draft workouts, but they've been piling up in Miami, and we're going to just, let's quick hit them. Let's lightning round the whole podcast. Go through them, what we think about them. I don't have the order, so we'll just kind of start from this random obscure order that we kind of put together here, but
yeah, it's hard to glean too much because obviously teams are going to keep that kind of information to themselves. Mm. Players and agents control what's said about those workouts. And you know what? They're very grueling in the sense that these guys are flying from city to city. I mean, I'm sure that even though Miami's picking 14th, a team like Orlando just to the north is you know, they have a number of picks in the first and second round. They've got four picks total in the draft. Some of these guys that Miami is bringing in for workouts could potentially slide to 25. If that's the case, Orlando might be willing to take them and kind of show them around for a workout. There's Atlanta also. There's, you know, all these teams in the division and players are flying around having these workouts. I saw an interview earlier today from, I can't remember exactly what player, but he was brought in that morning for a workout and he had no idea. He was like, oh, I came in yesterday. And then like halfway through his sentence, he goes, oh, no. Today, I got in today. Like, they don't even know what the hell's going on anymore. They're not used to the kind of travel that the NBA players go through, but this is an even more concentrated form of that. So it's quite a lot going on for them. So I'm not sure if they're necessarily indicative.
Of walking down the runway for every one of these teams. I'm half the time I'm sure they're not even sure what team they're working out for.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Heat have worked out a bunch, and just a quick shout out to Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, who's been so on top of all of this and reporting all of it. So we credit him for all this information. Yep. But like you said, it's hard to make conclusions based on the guys that they've been working out. It doesn't mean that they're going to take one of these guys, but it doesn't not mean anything either, right? Like there is. Yep. Obviously a strategy to this. They're not wasting their time. You only have a finite amount of time to get ready for the draft. They're not just, not everything's a smokescreen. Just like not everything is concrete. But you look at this list, 8 bigs, 3 guards, and a small forward. I mean, so eight bigs and 4 perimeter players, really. Right. And you look at that list and you say, well, it does look like they are looking at positions that they might have to fill because certain free agents might leave this summer. So let's go through the list here. I'll read all of them, and then maybe we'll just pick a few highlights and kind of talk about them. So Luke Kennard of Duke, Donovan Mitchell, the guard from Louisville, Locked On Heat favorite, John Collins, the forward from Wake Forest, Duke power forward / center, Harry Giles, Justin Patton, center out of Creighton, Jarrett Allen, a center out of Texas, Jonathan Motley, a tweener, power forward, center type guy out of Baylor. Justin Jackson, a North Carolina forward. Ivan Rabb out of Cal. He's a power forward. Ike Anigbogu, the UCLA center who has a 7'6" wingspan. Thomas Bryant, the Indiana center. Terrence Ferguson, who played last year in Australia. He's a shooting guard. And Ferguson was actually the most recent one. I don't know what to make of Ferguson because every profile I read says this guy has three-point shooting potential, but he doesn't have great three-point shooting stats. He's just a little too raw for me. He actually decided not to play college ball in America, went overseas, got paid by playing professional ball in Australia, and we've seen that, you know, you've seen guys like Dante Exum do that in the past, and it's not necessarily been the best move. It takes those guys a little while to actually get back into the States and get acclimated and find a role in the NBA. I'm really not that high on Ferguson. He's actually been dropping down draft boards. I don't know if you have an opinion on him.
You know, I did see him. I don't know that he's necessarily dropping, but I mean, I guess he's still too much of a long-term project. It doesn't seem like the ideal fit for Miami, who I think is looking for somebody to make more of an immediate impact with the 14th pick. He might wind up having a great career, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like a likely fit. I think they're just looking, again, at a potential hole in shooting guard should Deion Waiters sign elsewhere. And if that's the case, they're going to need some capable scoring off the bench. And Ferguson seems to fit that mold, but again, I think there's just too many other glaring holes there where he's not a legitimate selection.
He reminds me so much of Terrence Ross, and not just because of the first name, but he's similar size. Terrence Ross was drafted in the top 10 when he was drafted, but he wasn't. That was kind of a reach when he was selected. Yeah. And Ferguson, the one thing about Ferguson that he's got going for him, he's really like the only true shooting guard in this draft, you know what I mean? Like Mitchell, Kennard, they're like combo guards, right? Like they could play a little, like Ferguson in no stretch of the imagination is going to play point guard for you. He's going to play two and maybe some small ball three. And he's got great athleticism, right? Like he could jump out of a building. He'll be able to get lift on any 3-point shot he makes. He's got the potential, like I said, to make threes according to scouting reports. But, he does have. If somebody is looking for that sort of player, like a 6'7" true shooting guard, he's really like the only guy that fits the bill. So I guess he's got that going for him. And if the shooting does translate, those are things we've said the Heat need: length and shooting.
It just doesn't seem like the most likely selection. I think he's probably going to drop somewhere into the late teens, maybe early 20s.
So, I mean, Kennard, Mitchell. I like Kennard a lot. I don't think he's going to be on the board at 14. I think Charlotte and Detroit at 11 and 12 make too much sense for him. He's a guy doesn't have a ton of high upside, but he probably has the highest floor out of any of these guys. Like in this range, he's a guy that can walk into the NBA. He's going to be able to play backup guard for you. He's going to be able to handle the ball a little bit. He's going to be able to shoot and make open 3-pointers. He's really competitive, high basketball IQ, great feel for the game, has played at the top level of college basketball at Duke. He's going to transition. I think he'll transition pretty easily into the NBA. If he's there at 14, it makes sense, but only if Miami is looking to trade Tyler Johnson or if they don't think Deion Waiters is going to be back.
I don't like the pick at all. I don't see him fitting in Miami. I think he's climbing on draft boards because he's kind of a throwback type player, and I think he's also an obsessive gym rat. And I think these shooting drills kind of benefit a guy like him whose best skill is shooting. So you can kind of see him just knock the shot in repeatedly. And that kind of rhythm and repeat exercise really highlights his skill set. And all of a sudden you're watching him and you're like, wow, this guy's really good. Put him in an in-game situation against NBA-level athletes that are going to be infinitely more quick than he is. And I think all of a sudden all of those glaring weaknesses that had him – as a late first-round pick, all of a sudden become exposed, and you realize, oh, yeah, maybe he was a bit of a reach. So if Michael Jordan wants to take him with a 13th pick, have at it, but I don't want him here. Is it? No, where is Charlotte?
11. And I think that sounds like a Michael Jordan pick, by the way.
Oh, sure. Duke, North Carolina guy.
He always reaches. Yeah. Well, Kennard's teammate, Harry Giles, also worked out for the Heat. He's probably one of the more polarizing guys in the draft just because of his injury history, which is – there's a lot of it, and he's not even 20 years old, I don't think.
He seems to be moving up as well, but, I mean, the issue with him, he's just – there's so much length there. There's such great scoring ability. If he winds up being 100% healthy, there is explosiveness there. He's got some really great comps. You know, Amar'e Stoudemire, I think, is one. I'm trying to remember who else at this point, but you know,
Stoudemire's the one that sticks out to me, and I see it, right? He's got the
frame and the length. He can put on muscle. He's still so young, as you pointed out. So there's a lot of potential there. But as you and I were talking about before we started recording, God, those knee injuries are brutal. Like you look at what happened to him, and let me read it out again.
Sure.
Where is it exactly? It was a litany of injuries there, and none of them very good. A torn left ACL. Yeah, torn left ACL, torn left MCL, his meniscus in 2013 as well, all on the left. Torn right ACL in 2015, and then he had a procedure this past year. That's not good. For a guy who's 19.
Procedure was on the right knee, too, so he's had issues. And even before the procedure, he had a right knee issue. Both knees. It's not one knee. It's both knees. And that's scary. But then you say, okay, well, he's young, right? And if anybody gets back from this, it's him. The problem with Giles is that he's not like he's not a prolific shooter. So even if his knees don't hold up, it's not like he can make it up elsewhere. You know what I mean? He's young, so he's like the basketball IQ isn't necessarily like you look at a guy like Sean Livingston, whose knees gave out on him. Obviously, a completely different position, but he's been able to make a career for himself in Golden State with high basketball IQ. He's found a few go-to moves, and he's been able to carve out a role for himself that was completely different than what was envisioned for him when he entered the NBA. Now, he got injured in his first season in the NBA. Giles has been injured multiple times prior to ever stepping onto an NBA court. And really, if you're the Heat and you're picking at 14, you're not looking at Giles and hoping that maybe down the road he can carve out a role for himself like Sean Livingston did. You're hoping that he can be Amari Stoudemire. That's why you would take him. I think if like the Heat had him in for the workout, I'm sure they checked out his knees. If they are comfortable with it, then Giles is on the board. And if he is on their draft board, then he's going to be probably right around, like, I think 14 is a good, would be a spot where they could take him. Because if he's on the board, that means that they're comfortable with his knees, and if they're comfortable with his knees, then his upside would be so tantalizing and higher than anybody else probably that's going to be available at 14, then there's a real chance that they take him if they're comfortable with his knees. And if they're not comfortable with his knees, it's not like that they would take him at 30 if they had the 30th pick. If you're not comfortable with his knees, you're not comfortable. You don't think that he's going to be able to play in the NBA. You're just not taking him. He's not going to be on the draft board at all. So Giles is really interesting.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you're kind of off there, because I think there are teams that have some concerns, and just enough concern to shy them away. If you're at the 13th pick in the draft, you're Denver with 13, and you look at potential options there, and Giles is one of them. You may have some issues with him running up and down at the Mile High level. You don't think he's the right fit to keep pace with a guy like Jokic. You know, maybe he's not the right fit there. I'd say you pass him. I mean, yeah, I think there's plenty. So I don't think, to me, option for Miami.
How is that disagreeing with what I said?
Because I think you said that if he's available on the board, that shows that he's worth taking. And to
I think only if you're comfortable with his knees. Only if you're you've got to be 100% comfortable. And if you're not, it's what I'm trying to say is you're not on his knees. Like, you're not like in between, like we could take him or we couldn't. It's either you're 100% ready to take him, like you're like, oh no, his knees check out, we don't have an issue with it, or you're saying there's no way I'm touching this guy. It's either or with Giles. I don't think there is an in between.
I don't see him in Miami, to be honest with you. I think the concerns are realistic, and I don't think they want to take a chance again. And from everything we've heard, they're looking for more of an impact player. Giles is somebody who might potentially have a great career if he can stay healthy, but that's a mighty big if, you know.
There's a lot of other bigs too, and that's the other thing. It's not like Giles is the only power forward, center, tweener that's going to be available in that range. There's actually the Heat, if they want a power forward, center, tweener, they're right in the thick of part of the draft where all these guys are going to go. And there's a few of them. There's John Collins out of Wake Forest, Jared Allen out of Texas. He's a true center, but he's got a ton of upside. I think you like him a lot, right, Jared Allen?
I do, yeah. I saw some film of him again. You know, it's hard to tell. I'm never going to go out and say that I'm a draft expert. There are guys like Sam Vecenie, who was on our show and talked about a lot of these players. He's great. He's broken down hours and hours of film. He's much more knowledgeable about the subject than we are. All I can tell you is from my own looking at what he does and on the floor, and again, this is our encapsulated in highlight form, so you're going to have a skewed perspective, but he's got great ups, really, really springy. I mean, the kind of guy who seems to fit very well in today's league. You know, he can attack the rim. He's got the length. He's intelligent. I think he's got some good basketball IQ there. He seems to understand his fit. He can stretch the floor a little bit. He's got a comfortable mid-range jumper with a really nice stroke, to be honest with you. It doesn't look uncomfortable. Like, you know how you see a guy like Whiteside hoisting and you're going to like, oh, no, I don't know where this is going to wind up. This is not the case with Jared Allen. And he's young, too. So he's very young. He only played 1 year in Texas, and he's got the length and size. And I think he has the frame to build up, too. But another guy I like is
Allen is a guy, though, that can only play center, right? He's not a guy that's going to play power forward.
And He could. I think he's long enough. But you're right. I mean, you probably – at 6'11", he'll play center for you. He's got – that's the thing, though. He can make switches defensively in pick and roll situations.
So he
can
guard guys in the frame. If the Heat take a guy like Allen, that would he would basically be developing behind Whiteside for a couple of years, and then that might be a situation where the Heat trade Whiteside's max contract and just start a guy on a rookie scale contract.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, and you were gonna say Ike Anigbogu.
Ike Anigbogu. Yeah, I do actually. I think I saw again some workout film of him, and He's got some consistency on his jumper, something that he didn't really have an opportunity to shoot while at UCLA because they had such a talented team. They had guys like TJ Leaf and Lonzo Ball in the perimeter. Didn't really need him, but he's got great length, definitely an NBA-ready body. He's got some great ups. And again, he's got a very consistent shooting mechanism on his jumper there. It's not something you expect to see out of a guy that young, but I think there's enough time to build there. And again, I think that overall athleticism makes him an attractive option at 14.
So I'm looking at the guys that they worked out, and you like Anigbogu, and Allen. I have a problem with the guys that can really only play center. As high upside as they do, the Heat have that. And unless they're looking to unload Whiteside almost immediately, I just don't see the upside of getting a guy like that at 14. In the way that the NBA is trending, there just seems to be so many of them. Like a guy like Thomas Bryant, who has as much raw skill almost as Allen and Anigbogu, he might be there in the second round. And a Tony Bradley out of North Carolina, like those, there's so many of these guys that are going to drop in the draft. The Heat, I think, could just buy a second round pick and nab one of these guys. But at 14, I want someone who could play multiple positions if they're a big man. I just don't know which one. I like Zach Collins. Oh, I think I left him off here. They did.
He hasn't been brought in for a
while. I love Zach Collins, man. There's mixed reviews on Collins, but what I know he can do is he can play the four and he can play the five, and he flashed a shooting stroke. He's going to be able to defend and rebound right away. That's the sort of guy I like. Motley, who's probably going to be a second-round pick, but he can play some four and five. You mentioned we talked about OG and Inibi a few times this summer.
Yeah.
He would be great at playing anywhere between the three and the five. Those are the guys that if they're there at 14, guys that can play multiple positions, that they could switch and defend multiple positions, and then you can line them up anywhere because with Whiteside in the middle, yes, Miami has great rim protection already, but they're also pretty limited to like what they're going to be able to draft and who they're going to be able to play at the five. You've got to play Whiteside 35 minutes a game. So if that's the case, then you're either – and you draft a center, you're only going to be able to get 13 minutes out of him unless he can play a little bit of power forward, right? So now you can kind of get those minutes up to 20 to 25 minutes a game.
And look, we've heard – rumors and speculation that if Anunoby is on the board at 13, there's no way he's getting past Denver. Denver will take him there. I don't know why that's the case. I'm not sure. I'm sure they've brought him in for a workout. I'm sure other Nuggets reporters would probably have a lot more information as to why he seems like such a great fit there. I don't know if that's just speculation on people's part. I mean, obviously, we have no way of knowing exactly what the front office is thinking, and they're not going to divulge that. But another thing to consider is, look, it's the draft. The draft will have surprises mixed into it. Somebody's going to go early. Like you said, you know, Charlotte is probably going to reach for a player at 11 that they shouldn't take at 11. And if that's the case, somebody's going to drop a little bit more, and they might comfortably drop into Miami's lap. And if that's an NBA at 14, that would be great. And you know, we talked about the fact that maybe he might not fit necessarily alongside Justice Winslow. There's certainly that possibility. But if you're looking at multiplayer, you know, personnel, you know, capability there, versatility to play a number of positions and defend a number of positions, he seems like a really nice fit. And look, they didn't have Winslow in for a workout either. Nobody expected him to be at number 10 when Miami chose him a couple seasons ago. But he dropped because Orlando took Hezonja, because Charlotte inexplicably mortgaged their future for, you know, Frank Kaminsky. I mean, there were so many different things going on with that draft. And all of a sudden, Winslow drops at number 10. You never know what can happen. Even at 14, you're still in a position where you could probably find somebody with some great upside.
I think TJ Leaf, another guy that Miami worked out, that we left off the original list. But
I didn't see him on any workout list, to be honest with you.
I found a Miami Herald article just now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, okay. So Leaf has been – he was actually worked out a few weeks ago. He's another – I don't know how versatile he is. I'm not sure if he could play five, but I know he could play four. And I know he can get buckets, and I know he's got a nice outside shot. He strikes me as a guy who can also maybe slip into the top 15 somewhere, whether it's Miami or elsewhere, depending on just how the draft shakes out. But of all the guys that we talked about before we wrap this up, is there one guy that you just dream pick for you? If he's there at 14, you would be disappointed if Miami didn't take him.
I think Mitchell's that guy. I think you kind of sold me on him a little bit as being the potential follow-up for Dwayne Wade Part 2. I think he's certainly a nice fit. And I'm just looking for guys that have overall athleticism. You know, maybe there's something wrong with me, and I'm looking at guys like Leaf and Collins, and I'm seeing them, and I don't see that they have enough athleticism. I just don't see them being as great fits, but I think a guy like an Enobi or Mitchell are immediate impact players.
I mean, I agree. I think if you're picking at 14, and it would be one thing if Miami was picking at 14 and they had their pick next year, but their pick is top 7 protected. And so if they're not in the top 7, that pick's going to Phoenix. You have to do two drafts worth of work in one pick almost if you're the Heat. And you got to get a guy with high upside. And the other part of this that we nobody really talks about a whole lot is if you get a guy like TJ Leaf, who seems like a nice player and everything, he's going to play a role in the NBA. He'll be a valuable player for somebody probably. But if you get a guy like that, how enticing is a guy like TJ Leaf in a potential trade? Because you know what you're getting out of him, but he doesn't have a ton of high upside. If you get a guy at 14 like Mitchell, who, okay, maybe he doesn't pan out, but what if he does pan out? Like, that is, I think, more enticing in a trade package for somebody like Paul George or Jimmy Butler or something like that. That's got to be considered here. Just the guy who is maybe, you know, 2 years away from possibly being an all-star in this league versus a guy who you know could just be a role player, that's huge in potential trades. Or if you're the Heat, maybe getting that all-star at 14 that you probably need to compete in the East. So I like Mitchell a lot. The other guy, I keep going back to Justin Jackson. I know he's not a favorite of scout, you know, NBA draft geeks, guys that really dig into this, that know more, like you said, more than us. Every time I watch his games, he leapt off the screen to me, and I feel like we tend to overlook guys that don't project to have potential in the ways that we have seen potential. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Draymond Green wasn't seen to have a lot of potential. Turns out he's the defensive player of the year, probably. Just because he didn't have this type of potential that we're used to seeing. I think Jackson has that. I don't know where it's going to come from. I don't know how that's going to materialize in the NBA. But he's always in the right position. He's got such a high basketball IQ and feel for the game. He just gets buckets. He's a tremendous passer. He's got great vision. And I look at all those things, and I'm like, this guy's going to be successful in the NBA, and I don't know why he's got to be limited to just being Matt Barnes. I don't know why he's got to be limited to that, because he looks so much better than that to me. And I'm not an expert, but he jumps off the screen to me when I watch him. He just gives me a good gut feeling. So Justin Jackson, Donovan Mitchell, though, is obviously the Kelly Oubre draft prospect of the summer for us. But anything else?
No, I mean, not really. It's just, you know, obviously so much depends on a player's immediate ability to grasp, you know, offenses and defenses at an NBA level, the individual willingness to put in the work, and of course just a fit. You know, something changes with this roster come July 1st when free agency opens, and you get a guy like, you know, let's say you get a guy like Gordon Hayward, or you're able to re-sign just Deion Waiters and James Johnson, which is fine, and all of a sudden you have a guy, and Willie Reed leaves. You draft a center or a forward center option, a guy like Ivan Rabb or John Collins, and all of a sudden these guys start to grow because they gain more experience. You never know. I mean, look, we mock Kaminsky because he struggled so much his rookie year because he's white, because he's open to being goofy and dancing on the big screen the way he does. And I think he kind of invites that to kind of flex from seeing too much of him up close, and I had a chance to talk with him, and so I don't know that I know him any better than anybody else, but I think this is just my interpretation. But the reality is, in his sophomore year, he turned in a pretty solid season. Maybe you don't see the ninth pick in the draft and you say, I want a guy who's solid, but you know, somebody has to fit that ninth, tenth spot on the roster.
Yes.
You can't all get, you know, starters and guys that are all-star levels, you know. It's things change, you know. Somebody in the second round is going to wind up making an all-star team in the future before somebody who gets selected in the first round, and we have no way of knowing who that is. So hopefully you can find a guy who has an immediate impact, who fits well with the culture, with the team as it's currently constructed, and they get the most of the opportunity. They make the most of that opportunity in summer league with the D league, and they grasp the concepts that Miami's coaching staff is trying to instill, they'll have a better chance of success long term and also immediately.
And names that keep getting thrown around, you know, among Heat fans is Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kawhi Leonard. They were picked at 15. Miami can find that at 14. And that maybe that's true. But also, if you can get a guy like Matt Barnes, right? Or, you know, who's Justin Jackson's being compared to, J.J. Redick, who Luke Kennard's being compared to. If I told you right now, you can get a player right now at 14 who will have J.J. Redick's career, you take it. But that's also just, it's also an improbable find. 14, historically, is not a great pick.
Can I interject here real quickly?
Sure.
I happened to look up Kawhi Leonard's draft comps. You'll never guess. Gerald Wallace?
Oh.
Yeah, he was Gerald Wallace.
How many more?
Luke Mbamute.
Oh, wow. See?
So I think he surpassed those comps just a bit. I think he might be slightly better than one-time All-Star Gerald Wallace.
That was a good year, though, that Wallace had.
That was a good year. Still not half as good as what Kawhi just did. So
yeah, I mean,
draft comps are hard to – they're not exactly set in stone, obviously.
Kawhi Leonard's probably better than anybody that was taken ahead of him, too. But like I said, like, you can find Kawhi, maybe. But even if you find J.J. Redick or Matt Barnes, if the guy that you have that you take at 14 ends up having one of those kind of careers, that's a really successful pick at 14. So just let's not just be looking for the next Kawhi Leonard, because chances are that's not happening. Chances are you're not even finding the next J.J. Redick or Matt Barnes at 14, if we're being honest. That would be a successful pick. But anyway, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. And to support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.